Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today on our Capitol Report, we'll tell you about growing evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia in an effort to influence the election outcome, including email exchanges with Donald Trump Jr. regarding a meeting he attended with a Kremlin-linked lawyer and a Russian counterintelligence agent who has been accused of electronic hacking in the past. From Public News Service, learn details about the newest health care bill rolled out this week by Republicans. And hear about a lawsuit against the president that seeks to declare Twitter a public forum and prevent Trump from banning users he doesn't like. Learn about an affordable housing bill moving forward in the state legislature. Plus, hear about an African-American public defender, Genevieve Jones Wright, who is running for San Diego District Attorney on a platform of justice and accountability for all. Then we'll have an update from the County Health Department on the hepatitis A outbreak. Learn why this fire season is shaping up to be more extreme than in recent years. Plus, we'll have a reminder from CAL FIRE on why you shouldn't fly a drone near a wildfire. And we have some sad news about an inmate firefighter who lost his life of injuries sustained while battling a blaze in Lakeside. On Crime Beat, get details on a bank robber in La Mesa wanted by the FBI, and learn about a La Mesa psychiatrist whose medical license has been revoked. On Destination East County, hear about exciting events coming up, from group hikes to a falconry demonstration and stargazing, plus outdoor movies and local concerts starring some of the biggest names in rock and roll. The family of Alfred Olango, who was killed by an El Cajon police officer, is planning a march on his birthday, and we'll have the tales. Then on sports, learn about a new coach hired by San Diego State University. Get details on a court ruling that will impact charter schools in our education report. Next, we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Hakumba, one of our region's quirkiest roadside landmarks. And we'll tell you where to find cool zones in this summer heat. Plus, find out which international sports star just reportedly had twins right here in East County. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. President Donald Trump, his top aides, and family members have repeatedly dismissed claims that his campaign conspired with Russia to win the election as fake news and lies. But evidence is now clear that those statements were untrue. A chain of emails released by the president's own son, Donald Trump Jr., show an intent to collude with Russia, veteran prosecutors, and white-collar defense attorneys, according to Politico, which says he has handed Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, quote, a smoking gun. A Time magazine cover features Trump Jr.'s face with the headline, Red-Handed, The Russia Scandal Hits Home. Trump Jr. released the emails himself, claiming he was doing so to be transparent, the Washington Post reports. But he did so only after learning that the New York Times was about to publish those emails, which revealed that he set up a meeting with an attorney who was, quote, part of Russia and its government support of Mr. Trump, specifically because the Russian attorney claimed to have official documents that would incriminate Hillary Clinton, Trump's election opponent. A family friend, publicist Rob Goldstone, helped set up that June 9, 2016 meeting, and he wrote to Trump Jr. in a June 3 email that the Crown Prosecutor of Russia offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father, Reuters reports. Copied on those emails were Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, and Paul Manafort, his then-campaign manager. All three attended the meeting with the Russian lawyer, Natalia Veselnitskaya. Trump Jr.'s response, I love it, he replied. He later claimed the lawyer did not actually deliver the damaging material on Clinton as promised, however, but instead shifted talks to the Magnitsky Act, which sanctioned Russian human rights abusers, and the Russians' retaliation by stopping adoptions of Russian children. Prior to learning the New York Times was about to release those damning emails, Trump Jr. had claimed the meeting was set up to discuss Russian adoption policies. And even after disclosing the meeting, he initially failed to mention that Russian counterintelligence officer Renat Akhmetzin also joined that meeting, the Washington Post reports now. Akhmetzin has previously been accused of illegal corporate hacking, Courthouse News reports. Might Akhmetzin have been engaged to hack into Hillary Clinton or DNC email accounts seeking damaging information, or into U.S. election systems directly, including systems of multiple state voting rolls where phishing attempts were made? Such hacks have been confirmed, testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee and other accounts have indicated, but it's not yet clear who authorized them or who carried them out. Those are questions the ongoing investigations may seek to probe. Did President Trump know of the meeting which took place at Trump Tower while he was also present at Trump Tower? He has claimed he had no knowledge. But 2 days before that meeting with the Russian lawyer and his son, just one day after Trump Jr. got an email offering dirt on Clinton from the Russians, candidate Donald Trump told media he would be making a major speech the following week with damaging information about his opponent, Hillary Clinton, and Russia. A speech, by the way, that he never made. Cornell Law School professor Jens David Olin says the question of the campaign's involvement in colluding with Russia now appears settled, adding, "The conversation will now turn to whether President Trump was personally involved or not." Trump has defended his son's actions and dismissed them as merely seeking opposition research, saying everybody does it. But conservative columnist Charles Krauthammer blasted that excuse on Fox TV. "This is not just opposition," he said. "This is a foreign power, and not just any foreign power, an adversary foreign power." Krauthammer further ridicules suggestions that it's not a crime if the damaging info wasn't delivered. The conservative commentator notes, "It's a hell of a defense to say your collusion was incompetent," and he likens the situation to agreeing to accept delivery of stolen goods, which is a crime even if those goods were not delivered. The Constitution defines treason as conspiring with an adversary foreign power. Only 30 individuals have ever been prosecuted for treason in America's history. It's a very tough standard to prove. But other crimes, such as a criminal conspiracy and violations of election law, are far easier to prove. Federal law prohibits any contributions or soliciting contributions for anything of value from any foreign government. That includes results of research, hacking, or other in-kind contributions, contends a lawsuit just filed against the Trump campaign by Common Cause, the Campaign Legal Center, and Democracy 21. It accuses the Trump campaign, Trump Jr., Kushner, and Manafort of soliciting a contribution from a foreign national, PBS reports. The suit also names Goldstone for providing substantial assistance in soliciting a foreign donation. Such actions, apart from likely being crimes, also leave the Trump family and Trump's inner circle vulnerable to possible blackmail, critics point out. The Senate Intelligence Committee plans to call on Trump Jr. to testify, Reuters reports. The committee's ranking Democrat, Adam Schiff, told the press, "The American people need to know that our president is acting on their behalf and not acting because he has a fear that the Russians could disclose things that would harm him or his family." Republican Senator Lindsey Graham shares that concern. He states, "We cannot allow foreign governments to reach out to anybody's campaign and say, 'We'd like to help you.'" Trump has repeatedly claimed not to have ties to Russians other than selling a property once to a Russian. But numerous reports have clearly documented far closer ties through Trump's business enterprises as well as his campaign. A CNN video just released also shows Trump meeting in 2013 with the actual Russians who allegedly asked Goldstone to later set up that meeting between Trump Jr. and the Russian lawyer and others. Trump is heard on that videotape saying, "These are the most powerful people in Russia. These are the richest people in Russia." So he clearly knew their clout and influence. Trump Jr. has denied any wrongdoing. However, he's hired New York criminal defense attorney Alan Futterfus, who has represented organized crime mob figures, to represent him. Kushner, meanwhile, has suddenly remembered over 100 foreign contacts that he claims he forgot to disclose when he obtained his White House national security clearance. He's since revised his disclosure list to add more than 100 foreign contact names, including Russians. Senate Democrats have demanded that Kushner's security clearance be revoked, but that request has been denied by the Republicans. Not everyone agrees that the Trump team's intent to collude with Russia is a problem. San Diego Republican Party Chairman Tony Krivorek has bizarrely blamed the media for reporting on the scandal that many legal experts view as more serious than Watergate. In a survey of Republican leaders on the matter by Politico, which found many dismissive of the serious nature of the allegations, Krivorek stated, "Democrats and their allies in the media are actually doing the country a disservice with their scandal each day narrative," Newsmax reports. The ongoing investigations by the Senate, the House, the special prosecutor, and lawsuits make it likely that key figures, potentially including the president himself, may be forced to testify under oath on what they knew and when they knew it. That could open the door potentially to charges of perjury and obstruction of justice, since it's a crime to lie under oath, unlike false statements made to the media or voters in the American public.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July 14th, 2017. I'm Eric Tegedoff. The GOP releases a revised health care bill, but critics say it has the same problems as the old one. That's what critics are saying about the Senate GOP's revised version of a plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act revealed Thursday. In a concession to the right, the newest draft includes a proposal from Senator Ted Cruz, allowing insurers to offer bare-bones policies that leave out coverage for services like preventative or mental health care. But support appears to be lacking. For more on opposition to the newest bill, let's go to Andrea Sears in Pennsylvania.
Hoping to satisfy both the most conservative and more moderate factions of the GOP, the new proposal would leave ACA taxes on the wealthy in place and further deregulate the insurance industry. But according to Joanne Grossi, AARP Pennsylvania State President, it would still cut Medicaid by almost $800 billion, which would take a toll on residents of the Commonwealth.
More than 700,000 received health insurance now in Pennsylvania thanks to Medicaid expansion. And all of these people now will be in jeopardy of losing their health insurance.
At least two Republican senators have announced they do not support the revised version of the bill, putting its passage in jeopardy.
Is Twitter a public forum? The Knight First Amendment Institution says yes, and has filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump and White House officials seeking to halt the president from blocking Twitter users with whom he disagrees. The free speech advocates are representing several Twitter users, including a writer, a political organizer, and a comedian, among others. The suit contends that their First Amendment free speech rights were violated, as well as their rights to petition the government for redress of grievances. Press Secretary Sean Spicer has previously said the president's tweets are official statements on both his private and official White House Twitter accounts. The Knight First Amendment Institution likens the accounts to town halls and other public meetings, where public comments cannot be excluded simply because they offer dissenting views. The Knight First Amendment Group, which is a nonprofit affiliated with Columbia University, previously sent a letter to Trump, his attorney, press secretary, and social media director asking that the blocked Twitter users be unblocked, but the White House has refused to do so. Now, the group seeks a court order to require that the blocked accounts have access restored to read and retweet the president's messages. A similar case was filed against the County of San Diego in 2014 after Sheriff Bill Gore's department took down offensive posts off the sheriff's Facebook page. The poster, a local gun shop owner, sued and claimed his constitutional free speech rights were violated. The sheriff took down his own Facebook account rather than subject the county to costly litigation and eventually paid $20 to settle the suit. Some attorneys have argued that public officials should have the right to request that comments remain respectful while allowing dissenting views, a common rule in other public forums where the length and number of comments are also frequently limited. But others believe that any restrictions on content violate protected liberties. The president himself is a prolific tweeter, and free speech advocates argue that all Americans should be entitled to voice their views in response without fear of being silenced. The case against Trump may well determine whether or not public official social media accounts are personal or public, and just who has the right to determine what should and shouldn't be posted there. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Building Homes and Jobs Act, a measure to increase affordable housing in California, has passed the state Senate by a vote of 27-12. The measure, authored by San Diego Democratic Senator Tony Atkins, would create a permanent source of funding for affordable housing through a fee on certain types of real estate documents, excluding sales of residential and commercial property. Atkins' office projects that the bill would generate over $250 million for creating over 20,000 new affordable homes, as well as 57,000 jobs. The measure next advances to the State Assembly for consideration. On behalf of the thousands of California families who will benefit each year from SB 2 and the housing stability it will bring, I want to thank my Senate colleagues who voted for this important bill, Atkins said in a statement, adding, after today's vote, I am increasingly hopeful that relief is coming soon for many hardworking people. The measure could have a significant impact in San Diego, which is among the least affordable housing markets in the nation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Genevieve Jones Wright has served as deputy public defender in San Diego for over a decade. Now, Jones Wright, a Democrat, has announced plans to run for district attorney against Summer Stevens, a Republican appointed by supervisors to fill the vacancy left by Bonnie Dumanis' retirement. At a press conference announcing her candidacy, Jones Wright stated, "For far too long, we San Diegans have been at the whim of prosecutors who care more about headlines and political points than seeking justice." She pledges to be smart, as well as tough on crime, and her platform calls for justice, fairness, and accountability. She wants changes in how the criminal justice system treats people who are homeless, mentally ill, or addicted, and calls for an end to mass incarceration that she calls expensive and inhumane. Jones Wright decided to go to law school at age 9, inspired to follow in the footsteps of Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Both are African American, and Jones Wright obtained her law degree from Marshall's alma mater, Howard University. She also has roots in East County as a graduate of Patrick Henry High School in the San Carlos area. Besides serving as deputy public defender, she is a volunteer attorney with the California Innocence Project that works to free people who were wrongly convicted. She is also a commissioner on San Diego's Commission on Gang Prevention and Intervention. She knows firsthand what it's like to experience racial profiling, having once been stopped on her way from teaching mock trial students to her home in the Euclid area that she shares with her husband, a Navy corpsman. Officers handcuffed her at gunpoint and searched her car with drug dogs. She later learned she'd been a victim of mistaken identity, but believes a white person would likely have been treated differently, Voice of San Diego reported. She points to a recent study that found people of color are stopped and searched at a higher rate than whites by San Diego police, yet are less likely to be found with contraband. She says civic leaders ducked responsibility to address those problems, and she wants better training to improve respect for all persons. On her website, she states, "Every resident of San Diego County deserves to feel safe at home, at work, at school, and in public," adding, "I believe that public safety does not have to come at the expense of our constitutional rights. Every victim deserves dignity, support, and empowerment." She notes that child and elder abuse, domestic violence, murder, rape, and hate crimes are all on the rise in the region, adding that the status quo is not working. She also believes the time is ripe for progressive criminal justice reform, as voters have supported in recent local and statewide elections. The daughter of a single mom who worked in cafeterias and custodial work, Jones Wright recalls people telling her she'd never make it to college. But she resolved, "I write my own story." Now, she wants to continue that story as district attorney, though she faces an uphill battle since the office has customarily been held by prosecutors running on tough law and order platforms. But across the nation, progressive reformer DAs have been winning elections, notably in Houston, Chicago, Cleveland, Denver, Orlando, and St. Louis. An anti-Trump backlash among voters could also help a reform-minded Democrat win, and San Diego County is no longer a majority Republican registration. To win, Genevieve Jones Wright will need to convince voters that she can keep them safe, while also showing fairness and compassion toward both victims and those accused of crimes. She wants to make San Diego County families safer in three ways. First, by breaking the cycle of crime through early intervention, getting violent criminals out of the community while preventing nonviolent criminals from escalating their offenses, and disrupting the school-to-prison pipeline to keep kids who make mistakes from becoming hardened criminals. She believes reducing crime should include looking to the root of criminal activity, providing a bridge to resources for those who need treatment for drug addiction or mental illness, for example. Second, she aims to bring justice to victims. Treating victims with dignity is something that the criminal justice system severely lacks, she states. Jones Wright wants to have every rape kit tested, support every survivor, and see every wrongdoer held responsible, regardless of their status in the community. She also wants to be sure that the right person is prosecuted, noting, victims are not served unless justice is served. Third, she makes clear, no one is above the law. She wants to see elected officials, sheriff's deputies, and police officers held to the same standard as others. She's criticized Dumanis for not prosecuting a single law enforcement officer out of 155 officer-involved shootings investigated. She wants more transparency, including a consistent policy on releasing body camera footage. If elected, she pledges to work to train all law enforcement and prosecutors on racial, gender orientation, religious, and class bias, and ensure that all deputies understand the ethical and constitutional obligations of both victims and the accused. And she concludes, we need to ensure that politicians and government agencies are held accountable when they violate the public trust. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a health alert. A fifth person has died as a result of the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego County that now totals 228 cases and has hospitalized 161 people. The County Health and Human Services Agency has announced 70% of those victims are either homeless or use illicit drugs. 1 in 5 of the local patients with hepatitis A also have hepatitis C. So far, no common food, drink, or drug source has been identified as the cause of this outbreak. Dr. Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer, says it is imperative that anyone at risk for hepatitis A get vaccinated. She adds lives are at risk. Protect yourself, your family, and your community. The vaccine has been available since 1995, but many adults have never been vaccinated. In addition to children, hepatitis A vaccine is routinely recommended for those high-risk groups, travelers to countries that have higher rates of hepatitis A, users of illegal drugs, homeless people, gay men, people with chronic liver diseases such as cirrhosis, hepatitis B or hepatitis C, and people who share a household or have sexual contact with hepatitis A patients. Due to the outbreak, unvaccinated people who work closely with the homeless or illicit drug users are also recommended to get the vaccine, as are sanitation workers. Hepatitis A vaccines are available at many doctors' offices, clinics, and pharmacies. If you don't have health insurance, the vaccine is available at the county public health centers. For locations, call 211. The county is working with community partners to hold vaccination clinics for people at risk of hepatitis A. Partners include homeless service providers, community health clinics, faith-based groups, addiction treatment providers, hospital emergency departments, jails, and probation facilities. Symptoms of hepatitis A include jaundice or yellowing of the skin and eyes, fever, fatigue, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, dark urine, and light-colored stools. Symptoms usually last less than 2 months but can last up to 6 months. Hepatitis A can cause liver failure or death. Hepatitis A can be prevented through good hygiene. County health officials urge everyone to wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and running water before eating and after using the restroom or changing a diaper. Don't directly touch a door handle when exiting a public restroom, and don't share food, drinks, eating utensils, or smoking materials with other people.
It's shaping up to be a brutal fire season after a winter of heavy rains fueled heavy growth of grasses and brush across California. In the last week alone, 633 new wildfires have begun statewide. Some local strike teams have been sent from the San Diego region to help battle fires in other parts of the state. So far, there have been over 3,449 fires that scorched 92,439 acres in jurisdictions covered by the State Firefighting Agency, CAL FIRE, and on federal lands covered by the U.S. Forest Service. In CAL FIRE's jurisdiction alone, the number of acres burned in just the first 6 months of 2017 is over 68,000 acres. That's more than double the total for all of 2016. Here, in San Diego County, the Jennings Fire that began on Tuesday sparked concerns and frightening memories for many East County residents who have weathered serious firestorms in the past. The Jennings Fire was sparked by exhaust from a vehicle near Lake Jennings Road that ignited dry brush. The blaze charred over 400 acres and threatened several homes, forcing closure of Interstate 8 from Lakeside to Alpine. Traffic backed up for miles on Interstate 8 and Highway 67. Portions of Alpine south of Interstate 8 were under mandatory evacuation orders for several hours, and a voluntary evacuation was in effect for the Poets Valley area. The Jennings Fire also forced closure of some local schools, with two campuses opened up as emergency shelters to evacuees. Three firefighters suffered mild to moderate injuries battling the blaze, which sent smoke billowing up that was visible across East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz. It's shaping up to be a brutal fire season after a winter of heavy rains fueled heavy growth of grasses and brush across California. In the last week alone, 633 new wildfires have begun statewide. Some local strike teams have been sent from the San Diego region to help battle fires in other parts of the state. So far, there have been over 3,449 fires that scorched 92,439 acres in jurisdictions covered by the State Firefighting Agency, CAL FIRE, and on federal lands covered by the U.S. Forest Service. In CAL FIRE's jurisdiction alone, the number of acres burned in just the first 6 months of 2017 is over 68,000 acres. That's more than double the total for all of 2016. Here, in San Diego County, the Jennings Fire that began on Tuesday sparked concerns and frightening memories for many East County residents who have weathered serious firestorms in the past. The Jennings Fire was sparked by exhaust from a vehicle near Lake Jennings Road that ignited dry brush. The blaze charred over 400 acres and threatened several homes, forcing closure of Interstate 8 from Lakeside to Alpine. Traffic backed up for miles on Interstate 8 and Highway 67. Portions of Alpine south of Interstate 8 were under mandatory evacuation orders for several hours, and a voluntary evacuation was in effect for the Poets Valley area. The Jennings Fire also forced closure of some local schools, with two campuses opened up as emergency shelters to evacuees. Three firefighters suffered mild to moderate injuries battling the blaze, which sent smoke billowing up that was visible across East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Gene Carpenter with a public service announcement from CAL FIRE and the San Diego County Fire Department. Hobbyist drones are a growing safety concern among the local first responders fighting fires in the air and on the ground. As we approach peak fire season, San Diego County Fire and CAL FIRE San Diego unit officials are reminding hobby drone operators to steer clear of wildfires. Drones put first responders' safety at risk, and they stop or slow firefighting operations. Tony Meacham, County Fire and CAL FIRE San Diego Unit Chief, has this to say to drone pilots. "If you fly, we cannot fly," he adds. "One of the most effective tools we have in the early stages of a fire is the use of aircraft, and when people fly drones, I do not think they understand the impact this has on the fire agencies. We have to pull all fire aircraft out of the area until we can find the drone owner to land the drone. State law makes it a crime to impede firefighting and other emergency activities by flying a drone at the scene of any emergency. It is also a crime to interfere with or disobey the lawful orders of firefighters or emergency rescue personnel who are responding to or fighting a fire. A drone disrupted response to a brush fire near Camp Pendleton for a full hour recently. The fire charred a canyon near a mobile home community, and only ground crews could work the scene. A drone forced firefighting tanker planes and helicopters to divert to a nearby airstrip. In this case, grounding the aircraft did not result in structure loss or in any injuries or deaths. But in a different situation, the fire might have spread and burned toward those homes. Firefighting aircraft, such as air tankers and helicopters, often fly at low altitudes in the same airspace that hobby drone operators might use, putting pilots at risk for a mid-air collision. That was the case on the Camp Pendleton area fire, said CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Bert Kreminski, who coordinated that air attack. He said none of the fire aviators working the fire ever spotted the drone. The crews on the ground saw it flying about 200 feet off the ground, the same altitude where helicopters operate. Tankers also fly that low when dropping fire retardant. In fact, the drone was seen hovering over the retardant line dropped earlier by the tankers. Pilot Jim Johnson flies with the Sheriff's Astria Helicopter Service, which partners with CAL FIRE to make water drops during fires. He says that even in the best environment, drones are very hard to see, and even harder during a fire with smoke and multiple aircraft in the area. CAL FIRE Captain and Public Information Officer Sanchez said there is a risk the drone could crash into the front windshield or hit a rotor blade, causing a catastrophe for an aircraft and for people on the ground. Fire agencies are not going to take that risk with their pilots and firefighters. Sanchez says rogue drones are taking a very valuable tool away from the firefight and allowing the fire to grow. If members of the public see someone flying a drone near a wildfire or other emergency, they can call 911 or 1-844-DRONE-11.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. The FBI and the San Diego Violent Crimes Task Force are seeking the public's assistance to identify a bank robber who held up the Cal Coast Credit Union in La Mesa on Tuesday. The robber approached the teller and provided a handwritten note demanding money, then fled on foot. His attire was notable, since he wore a large straw hat and a chef's apron over a dark T-shirt. He is described by witnesses as an African-American man in his 30s, around 6 feet tall with medium build. He did not display a weapon. If you have any information regarding this apron and straw hat garbed robber, contact the San Diego FBI at 858-320-1800 or San Diego Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 or visit sdcrimestoppers.org.
A La Mesa psychiatrist, Dr. Harry Henderson III, has had his medical license revoked by the California State Medical Board. The causes for disciplinary action include gross negligence, repeated excessive prescribing of narcotics, prescribing to addicts, and prescribing without appropriate medical examination or medical need. The investigation involved multiple patients, including one who was prescribed thousands of pills ranging from sedatives to narcotic painkillers. Some prescriptions include dangerous and potentially life-threatening combinations of powerful and addictive narcotics, such as fentanyl, which is 50 times more powerful than heroin. NBC7 TV reported that the medical board based its investigation on an anonymous tip from a health provider who treats inmates and the homeless. That provider complained of repeatedly seeing substance-abusing inmates on high doses of anti-anxiety medications, also being prescribed pain medications. The tipster said of Dr. Henderson, "I have great concern that he is known by the inmates as someone who will give them what they want." Dr. Henderson did not respond to NBC7's request for comments. East County Magazine tried to call Dr. Henderson's office, but the phone was not answered. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Cal Fire Family Day at Lake Morena, Astronomy Night on Mount Helix, the author of Nature Adventures in La Mesa, and a showing of The Jungle Book in La Mesita Park.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a family hike plus falcons and hawks at Santa Isabel Preserve, superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey at San Diego State, a murder mystery theater in Julian, a Pacific Crest Trail presentation, Pine Valley Days, Julian's Apple Pie Grand Prix, the Heart of Mount Helix, and Ramona's Country Fair.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to Cal Fire Family Day on Saturday, July 15th at Lake Morena County Park from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. You can explore a fire engine and learn how to be fire safe, plus watch a fire hose in action. Wear comfortable shoes and meet in the overflow parking lot. For more information, you can call the Lake Morena County Park at 619-579-4101 or visit the park's Facebook page.
Mount Helix Park is partnering with the San Diego Astronomy Association to host Astronomy Night atop Mount Helix on Saturday, July 15th from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Bring your telescope or witness the cosmos through one provided by members of the SDAA, who will be on the site to help you interpret the night sky. Feel free to bring a picnic dinner, no glass bottles please, and enjoy a spectacular sunset prior to stargazing.
Linda Gayo-Holly, Mission Trails Regional Park docent and author of the new book, Nature Adventures, will sign copies of her book at Maxwell's House of Books in downtown La Mesa on Thursday, July 20th, during the evening's Classic Car Show. The book includes facts about the habitats and wildlife of this region, featuring animals big and small, from spiders to shrews, flying bats to cats, and even smelly skunks. For more information, you can visit sunbeltpublications.com.
The City of La Mesa invites you to enjoy an outdoor movie in the park on Friday, July 21st. Bring a picnic, lawn chair, or blanket and enjoy the 2016 version of The Jungle Book starring Mowgli and his animal friends in the jungle. The free movie will be shown on a large screen at La Mesita Park beginning 15 minutes after sunset. For more information, visit cityoflamesa.us/special events.
Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
You can join Ranger Eric in a short beginner's trek through Santa Isabel East County Preserve to learn essentials for a successful hike. The introduction of family hiking will be held on Saturday, July 22nd from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Learn what to wear, pack, eat, and drink before and during your hike. For more information, you can call the Santa Isabel East County Preserve at 760-765-4098.
Learn about the world's oldest hunting style and sport of kings from Master Falconer Cisco Siborn on Sunday, July 23rd from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Santa Isabel East County Preserve in Julian. Visitors will experience the world's fastest animal, the peregrine falcon, in action as he swoops down to allure. Bring a hat, water, and sunscreen to this event at the West Preserve, which meets in the staging area. For more information, call 760-765-4908.
Music superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey will rock the night at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on July 27th at 7 p.m. as part of their All the Hits tour. Richie has won an Oscar, 4 Grammy Awards, and 16 American Music Association Awards, among many other honors. Mariah Carey is the best-selling female artist of all time, with more than 200 million albums sold to date, 5 Grammy Awards, and the World Music Award for World's Best-Selling Female Artist of the Millennium. Tickets are available at the Viejas Arena website.
The Julian Triangle Club invites you to help solve a hilarious crime at the Murder Mystery Theater set for Friday night, July 28th from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the historic Julian Town Hall. Dinner will be catered by Jeremy's on the Hill. A county fair opens under a cloud as a real estate tycoon plots to buy it out and close it down. This riles the locals who love the fair, especially the pig races, which are being targeted by protesters. Add in female country singers who will stop at nothing to claw past each other to get to the top, plus some romancing, and you have the stage set for shenanigans and murder. The table that gives the best correct answer of whodunit before the killer is revealed will walk away with a stellar prize basket. For tickets or details, contact the Julian Triangle Club at 760-525-5137 or email juliantriangleclub@gmail.com. You can also learn more at julianca.com.
Adventurer Dana Law will present a travelogue about the West Coast National Scenic Trail on Tuesday, July 18th at the Hucumba Library at 6 p.m. On 31 separate journeys over 13 years, Law completed all 2,650 miles of the Pacific Crest Trail, which begins in California at the Mexican border and ends at the Canadian border in Washington. Discover its secrets, hear the stories, and see the photographs and videos of this amazing journey that spans the entire west coast of the U.S. The presentation, free, open to those over 13 years of age, includes a spaghetti dinner courtesy of the Friends of the Hucumba Library.
Pine Valley Days takes place July 28th and 29th. The annual tradition begins on Friday, July 28th, with a deep pit barbecue and live music by Barbed Wire. Then, on Saturday, July 29th, the Pine Valley Days Parade rolls through the town, followed by a day of fun festivities in the Pine Valley Park, including kids' activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music, food, and a horseshoe tournament. For details, check the Pine Valley Days 2017 page on Facebook.
The Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix will be held on Saturday, July 29th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This year's vintage sports car show, parade, and festival is a salute to the sports cars of Great Britain. Cars will be on display on Main Street from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by a parade of vintage cars that will proceed to Mangini Winery for a festival until 5 p.m. with live music, food, beer, and wine. The Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix is organized by the Julian Classic Motoring Society and the Julian Chamber of Commerce.
The Pomerado Brass Quintet will perform a concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, July 30th at 3 p.m. in the Outdoor Amphitheater. The Brass Quintet's repertoire includes classical, marches, jazz, ragtime, Dixieland, and Broadway musical selections. For more information, you can visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
The 10th Annual Heart of Mount Helix on August 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. will feature live art demonstrations and art auctions, music on two stages, a juried art show, succulent plant sale, and tastings from top local restaurants atop Mount Helix. The cherished Party on the Hill attracts around 500 guests annually, with funds benefiting the Mount Helix Park Foundation for upkeep of the amphitheater and park facilities. For tickets and the lineup of this year's entertainers, artists, restaurants, and other participants, visit MountHelixPark.org and click on the Heart of Mount Helix link.
The annual Ramona Country Fair will be held on August 24th through the 27th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Crafts, carnival rides, contests, vendors, live entertainment, fair food, and lots of fun are highlights of this event. A Western show and the second Ramona Motorcycle Rally are also being held this year. The fair is open Thursday and Friday evening, August 24th and 25th, and all day on Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th. For full hours and details, visit facebook.com/Ramona Country Fair.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Gene Carpenter with an education report from East County Magazine. Several recent court rulings will impact the future of many charter schools in California, including schools in East County. Last October, a California appellate court ruled that charter schools can't open campuses outside their authorizing district within the same county. That ruling affected a suit filed back in 2015 by the Grossmont Union High School District, which wants to shut down the Julian Charter School, Alpine Academy, and Diego Valley Charter School, all operating within the Grossmont District boundaries. In April, Judge Donald Donnelly ordered all three of these schools to close down by June 30th, but the State Board of Education granted a waiver allowing them to stay open until June of 2018. Donnelly's decision stems from a case against the Julian Union Elementary School District, which has operated charters in both San Diego Unified and Grossmont districts. An effort to save the schools came from four students who filed a request asking to modify Donnelly's decision. The students argued that revoking the charters for their schools would deny their education. But on June 27th, Donnelly denied the students' requests. Charters can generate profits for small financially struggling school districts such as Julian Union and Mountain Empire. The latter became embroiled in scandal after former superintendent Steve Van Zandt pled guilty to a felony conflict of interest for starting up charters supervised by Mountain Empire in other school districts, while pocketing money paid to a consulting firm owned by Van Zandt and his wife. A key argument against charters opening outside their home districts is that they take average daily attendance money from the state and divert those funds away from public schools. Some charters have faced accountability issues, as in La Mesa, where the La Mesa Spring Valley School District recently denied a charter request for College Preparatory Middle School. That school attained strong test scores, but was found to be non-transparent and non-responsive to other serious concerns raised by school board members. But students at some charters have been vocal in support of their schools. Diego Valley Charter, for example, has helped students who had to work to support their families, including many immigrants and refugees, as well as new mothers and students who were too old to attend public school to obtain high school diplomas. They argued that the district's efforts to shut down their school was all about money, not putting students' needs first. Alfred Alongo would have celebrated his 39th birthday on July 29th if he hadn't been fatally shot by El Cajon police officer Richard Gonzalez in September 2016. The shooting was ruled justifiable by District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis, but Alongo's family and some civil rights activists believe that justice was not served. The National Action Network and 15 other organizations will hold a march and rally on July 29th in El Cajon to announce a targeted effort calling on Police Chief Jeff Davis to fire Officer Gonzalez. The city has previously indicated that the city manager, not the police chief, is responsible for hiring and firing of employees. Officer Gonzalez has been demoted for sexually harassing women on the force, triggering lawsuits against the city before he killed Alfred Alongo. Alongo, an unarmed African-American man, was fatally shot after his sister made calls to 911 voicing concerns about his erratic behavior. According to the Los Angeles Times, a dispatcher asked repeatedly if Alongo was black or white, and told his sister that the situation was not a priority. A psychiatric response team was unavailable due to another call. Two arriving officers found Alongo wandering in a parking lot outside a Mexican restaurant. One officer ordered Alongo to take his hands out of his pockets, but Alongo pulled out an e-cigarette that police said resembled a gun, pointing it at one of the officers. One officer fired a non-lethal taser. His partner, Officer Gonzalez, fired several shots with his service revolver, killing Alongo. The death resulted in days of civil unrest in El Cajon, drawing international media exposure. On July 29th, a march starting at noon will be held by family members of Alongo, along with faith-based leaders including Reverend Shane Harris from the National Action Network. The march will end at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon, where speakers will include a representative from the Alfred Alongo Foundation, as well as Alongo's family. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Liz Alpert with an SDSU men's soccer report. San Diego State men's soccer head coach Lev Kirstner fortified his staff this week with the hiring of Josh Hill as assistant coach. A native of Chino, California, Hill brings a vast array of coaching experience to Montezuma Mesa, ranging from the collegiate level to the USL Premier Development League. He most recently was an assistant coach at UCLA in 2016 after serving as the Bruins' director of soccer operations in 2015. After a very thorough search, we are extremely excited to have Josh join our Aztec soccer family, Kirstner said. Josh's new ideas, positive energy, and outstanding work ethic will be a welcome addition to our staff. He comes from a story program that is rich in tradition, and we expect the wisdom he acquired there to assist our ultimate goals here. During Hill's tenure at UCLA, the Bruins led the Pac-12 with 17 all-conference selections overall and advanced to the second round of the NCAA tournament in both years. Prior to his arrival in Westwood, Hill worked as an assistant coach for his alma mater, the University of Laverne, while serving as head coach at Chino High School from 2010 to 2016, where he guided the Cowboys to numerous tournament titles, league championships, as well as the CAF state finals. In addition, Hill was the lead assistant coach for the PDL's Orange County Blue Stars FC from 2012 to 2014, and helped lead the amateur club team PSA OE to consecutive appearances at the Lamar U.S. Open Cup in 2014 and 2015. A four-year starter and scholar athlete at the University of Laverne, Hill was a three-time team captain for the Leopards, garnering a trio of all-conference scholar accolades from the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference as well. As a player at the club level, Hill also completed stints with Legends FC and Arsenal FC. In addition, he played for PSA Elite, an annual contender in the U.S. Open Cup. Previously, Hill helped assemble one of the most successful amateur sides in U.S. soccer, as PSA Elite made consecutive round of four appearances at the U.S. Open Cup in 2014 and 2015, losing only to Major League Soccer powers Seattle Sounders and the LA Galaxy. Hill currently holds a United States Soccer Federation C National license, and he has also served as a Nike All-Star coach, a youth development coach, and mentor.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hacumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hacumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hacumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Liz Albert with a sports report. Cristiano Ronaldo has been hailed as the greatest soccer star of all time by the Los Angeles Times and multiple international media outlets. Now he's the proud father of twins, and the Daily Mail newspaper in England reports that the twins were born at St. Grossmont Hospital in La Mesa. In accordance with hospital policy, the hospital declined to comment. Ronaldo announced the birth of his twin son and daughter, Mateo and Eva Maria dos Santos, on Instagram. He also has a 7-year-old son, Cristiano Jr. The British press reports that Ronaldo, who is single, conceived the twins via a surrogate, setting court records in San Diego. Birth through surrogacy is illegal in Portugal, where Ronaldo resides, which could explain why all of his children were reportedly born in California. His current girlfriend is now sporting a baby bump, sparking speculation that his family may soon grow larger. The sports star is so popular in his homeland that an airport in Portugal has been named after him. Born into poverty, Ronaldo's full name at birth was Cristiano Ronaldo dos Santos Aveira. His second name was chosen in honor of U.S. President Ronald Reagan. In addition to being the star of soccer, or football, as it is known in Europe, Ronaldo is also noted for his philanthropy, including helping survivors of the Indian Ocean tsunami. He has been named Global Artist Ambassador by Save the Children. He also launched a selfie app for charity, allowing fans to choose through dozens of filters to pose in selfies with Ronaldo. A forward for Portugal's national team and Spanish club Real Madrid, Ronaldo is considered the best soccer player in the world and regarded by many sports analysts as the greatest of all time. He's won many top international awards, 22 trophies, and holds the record for most goals scored in the top 5 European leagues, 369 to be exact. Since Cristiano Ronaldo's children were born in the U.S., they could be eligible to play on the U.S. soccer team when they grow up. Just imagine the fanfare should the offspring of the world's most famous soccer star someday decide to return to their birthplace and play for a San Diego team, if the proposed soccer city ever becomes a reality.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.